All right. Welcome back to the second part of the Majestics, I guess you could call them. Well, if I'm going to have to go through this for another hour, I'm going to put on a song at the beginning. Enjoy, guys. Enjoy.
Yo. Yo. Bit of Foster and Allen, guys. Let's get out of these shenanigans and get into a little bit of the next half of the first half of the show about some crazy stuff, guys. There's no doubt about it.
Of the pharaohs having these weirdly elongated skulls. This includes Akhenaten, Nefertiti, and their daughter Merhotep. In the case of Merhotep, there are multiple granite busts that you can see that were carved of her, in which she clearly has no hair and has this freakishly elongated skull. And remember, this is a culture that was apparently building pyramids at the time that these sculptures were made. The people with the elongated skulls had apparently been keeping their lineage secret and hidden in the Egyptian priesthood. But then remember that Egypt became weak and it was conquered by Rome. What happened when the Romans got in there is that they made a secret agreement with these people in the Egyptian priesthood who still had the elongated skulls. and they created a safe haven for them in the Vatican City. The Library of Alexandria was burned down, but only with a false flag, where they burned tax documents and census documents. They took all the good stuff that included books from before they came to Earth and relocated that to the Vatican Library. Then you go across to the other side of the Atlantic Ocean, and once again, you have a pyramid-building culture in Mesoamerica with people depicted in their inscriptions who have elongated skulls. And unlike the case of Egypt, with Mesoamerica, we now have the added benefit that there are multiple elongated skulls that have been dug up and were not censored, but are actually on display in museums in places like Bolivia. We have the researcher Brian Forster, who is bringing out new examples of elongated skulls, and they are being genetically tested, they're being analyzed, and they have clear physiological differences from the skulls that the rest of us have. These people have very large brains. Discover Magazine in the year 2009 came out with an article called "What Happened to the Hominids Who Were Smarter Than Us?" And it describes how in the early 20th century, elongated skulls were found in Boskop, South Africa, thus earning them the name the Boskop skulls. And they were given ceremonial burials. Apparently, these people were revered in their society. But the article claims that the brain volume is almost twice what ours would be, and thus the average person in their society would have an IQ of 150, and some of them could have an IQ that goes up to 300. These weird elongated skulls were also found in a dig in Siberia in a town called Omsk, and the men who dug them up were so afraid that many of them actually started crying and left their jobs and refused to come back. We furthermore see in the case of the Mongolian conquerors that there were reports of them having weird elongated skulls. And most recently, even in Europe, we have found tombs of the nobility, the wealthy people who preserve their bloodlines, such as in France. And they also have this bizarre elongated skull feature. It wasn't until insiders started talking to me that I thought about the fact that in the Vatican, you see people wearing these mitre hats, and those hats would very nicely conceal an elongated skull.
I'm sorry, my darling, but I need to really actually produce this for the next pretty much hour. I think I've got, damn it. Man, I've got more than an hour on this little topic, about an hour and 15. And I've not long restarted the next one. I might even take it into a stage three if we get a call in, because I would really like to just keep the call-ins down for the next hour and 15, unless you have some sort of issue, you know, that's really not good. I guess you could call it a not good issue.
These people with elongated skulls would look like us in their faces, and the hat would conceal the only thing that would make them appear to be different.
She's like, well, I wouldn't be on here if this wasn't the situation, to be honest with you.
My research also turned up data on an Italian noble family from the 14th century known as the D'Este clan. And the D'Este clan had very close ties to...
She's like, well, according to my wrists and the razor blade I'm looking at and listening to your show, I guess that is a high possibility.
The Vatican. What's so bizarre is when you look at a painting of Prince Leonello D'Este and someone who is either his sister or his wife, the scholars don't really know, they usually call her Princess D'Este, they both have freakishly elongated skulls in this painting. The story gets even more interesting when you trace the descendants of the D'Este clan, the lineage that they left behind. For what you find is that King George I, who began ruling in 1714, was a direct bloodline descendant of these people who obviously had the elongated skulls in the 1400s.
Sounds like so.
Then you find out that a variety of earlier British consorts, meaning nobility, also were direct descendants of the D'Este clan.
You got a big head?
Even more outrageous when you discover that the royal families of Norway,
you got a big Sweden, egghead, have you?
Spain, and Denmark are all descendants of the same elongated skull.
That's Moonhead. Egghead.
Let's not forget that only recently we found royal tombs in France and other countries in Europe in which the nobility again had these elongated skulls.
You don't?
And if you think this only has to do with divine right of kings and European nobility, you would be wrong.
She thinks she's noble.
In 1988, an article in the New York Times traced fully 13 out of all of the 40 U.S. presidents at the time as having a direct bloodline connection to European nobility. In 2012, a 12-year-old girl named Brigitte d'Avignon did a much more complex genealogical study of the U.S. presidents using the power of the internet and computers.
On School Watch tonight, the story of a 7th grader from Salinas who claims to have made a major discovery about President Obama. She and her grandfather say that President Obama is related to all but one U.S. president.
And she found that 42 out of 43 U.S. presidents all had a common ancestor in King John I from England. And this is not just any old king.
This is John.
The guy who actually chartered the Magna Carta, which became the defining element that turned into the British Constitution.
Wow.
D'Avignon says she spent countless hours on the internet over the summer researching the lineage of our presidents, a project that started with her trying to trace her own family tree.
But I'm the first historian to do all the presidents.
So that's almost all of the U.S. presidents that we've ever had. The bottom line is these people are tracking their lineage, they're tracking their bloodline, and they're making sure that their own people get steered into the positions of the highest power and influence worldwide, including the United States of America.
Within secret societies, there can be both good and bad people, white hats and black hats. So many of these secret societies are, of course, involved in very dark practices. But there are also secret societies out there that are harboring knowledge and information and technology to keep it out of the hands of the deep state or the black hats or the people that would do detriment with these technologies.
Some of the, I guess, very well-known elites, names I won't mention, but are on the front lobes of most watching this video, are highly involved not only in some of the slave trade aspects, but are also involved in dealing with non-terrestrials and dealing with organized crime down here on Earth and how it's related to these programs.
I will tell you, Director Deutsch, as a former Los Angeles police narcotics detective, that the agency has dealt drugs throughout this country for a long time. Director Deutsch, I will refer you to three specific agency operations known as Amadeus, Pegasus, and Watchtower. I have Watchtower documents heavily redacted by the agency. I was personally exposed to CIA operations and recruited by CIA personnel who attempted to recruit me in the late 70s to become involved in protecting agency drug operations in this country.
I think I'm going to get assassinated, Sue, after this one. There's no doubt about it.
For the record, my name is Mike.
I am not
P-P-E-R-T. I did put this information out 18 years ago, and I got shot at and forced out of LAPD because of it. I've been on the record for 18 years nonstop, and I'll be happy to give you, Congressman, anything that I have.
A lot of these elite are running a lot of financial scams, drug programs to raise money for these.
I have no ill nick towards my body. I am fine. If something happens, it wasn't by my own accord. Please understand these sort of situations. But I think sharing this sort of information might get me into a lot of trouble.
Secret programs that they have going on, and they take full advantage of this access.
They probably don't age anymore. If we, you know, a one percenter, you don't know who they are. You don't even know what they look like. You don't even know their name. They could go down and be at a 7-Eleven, you wouldn't even know it. So they could not age, and you wouldn't know it. Never get sick. Offsprings would be born. They'd be super smart, super strong. Just quality of life improved in every direction. And I'm sure the one percenters are enjoying it, while the rest of us are dying with diseases and malformities and stuff. They're walking around, you know, body beautiful. So that's just the medical area. Then and think about the other things. Transportation. The vehicles they travel around. Home, security, all that stuff. Just, you know, it'd be like somebody in modern suburbia looking at a man in a cave. We're the men in the cave.
What very often occurs is that an elite will get to a very old, ripe age, or they will and die, or they will die in some sort of an accident publicly. Privately, they are taken, and depending on their level, they are either age regressed or they have their consciousness basically downloaded into a clone that is an exact duplicate of them. They then disappear from the public eye forever and go into these programs or go into retirement. This is something that pops up a lot in the programs, and everyone that has served deeply knows that the elite have access, and many of them never really die.
What the deep state or the cabal or the new world order is a small group of very powerful but very psychopathic individuals that have acquired a lot of money, a lot of technology, and a lot of information over the course of centuries.
Definitely your politicians, the older ones, one that are chair people, that command the power, one percenters, chairman of the boards, those people, that's the ones we never know their names, don't know their faces, and they control all the power.
The more you get involved in these societies, the deeper and deeper you go, the more compromised you become. You start to learn more and more of the secret teachings. You have to work really hard for the knowledge. It can take years of time. You keep accessing higher and higher levels of rank, and they keep dropping these little seeds in as you go on. Seeds that start to blossom in your mind and make you think differently. Ultimately, if you go far enough down this road, you will be invited to participate in things like and human sacrifice. And if you don't do it, it's the offer you can't refuse. They may actually even kill you. Once you partake in these activities, whether you like them or not, they now have leverage they can use against you. If you ever dare to speak out against this group, they have photographs, they have films, they have the footage that can absolutely ruin your life.
Deze mensen, de meeste daarvan, hadden een Luciferiaans geloof. En dan kan iedereen zeggen, ja, geloof bestaat niet en God bestaat niet, alles bestaat niet. Nou, voor die mensen was het de waarheid en de werkelijkheid. Hun diende dus iets onstoffelijks. Hun diende wat zij noemden Lucifer. En ik kwam dus ook in die kringen. Alleen ik lachte erom, want het waren voor mij gewoon klanten. Dus ik kwam in wat ze noemden Satanskerken.
Ik wou zeggen, dit, we hebben het nu over het satanisme.
Ja.
And utilize much of that fear energy and traumatized energy that we release.
Towards the end of my training, it started to become pretty clear that I had done very well in the intuitive empath training. I'd done very well in the rest of the general training that I was given. And I was starting to be introduced to non-terrestrial beings. So it became very obvious that I was going to be interacting with non-terrestrials, and I assumed it was going to be in an off-world environment. Little did I know that I was going to be drafted in this program when I was 16 years old. And it was during my Christmas break between the age of 16 and 17 years old. I turned 17 in February. I was taken from my room. I was then taken to Parswell Air Force Base. I was then transported to the moon, where I sat and signed a bunch of papers that were non-disclosures, were just...
If you believe there is a man on the moon...
I wasn't even 17 years old yet. The Lunar Operations Command is a moon base, and it was built out originally by the Germans in the late 1930s, early 1940s. While they were building this complex, they had utilized an ancient alien building that was not too terribly far away. They had found a bunch of these buildings on the moon, and they had found one of the buildings that they were able to patch up with some of the concrete they made from the local regolith. They then were able to pressurize it and use it as a base of operations while they built out the Lunar Operation Command. After a number of years, and after Operation Paperclip, it served its purpose and integrated the Nazis into the military-industrial complex, the LOC was handed over to the Americans. When approaching the moon from Earth in an electrogravitic craft, you will find the moon will be at a distance, and then it will grow very quickly in front of you. And then the next thing you know, you are above the surface. You will then fly in the electrogravitic craft at breakneck speeds, except you don't feel inertia. You find yourself hugging maybe 90 feet, 300 feet above the lunar surface, going at incredible speeds until you reach a crater. And then you find yourself orbiting a crater. The person piloting the craft radios in, requesting permission to land. You don't see anywhere to land. All of a sudden, a little haze kind of occurs, and then there's a base. It's a Lunar Operation Command. And as you fly down and over, there is a control tower where they control the air traffic. As you fly around this base to make your final approach, you see a secondary crater. And as you fly down into that crater, it's fairly deep, and you end up popping out into the lava tube section, where you immediately see a giant building built into the middle of that lava tube that blocks it. And it's built kind of like the shape of a bell, and it looks like the outside of a battleship almost, the way it's built. You then fly in and land in the bay, and you're now at the Lunar Operation Command.
Well, some of the testimony that's come to me over the last year in particular has been nothing short of startling in terms of the degree to which the space program, the secret space program, has expanded. I've talked to people who have said that there is and has been an ongoing extrasolar planetary colonization program that's been going on for decades and decades. I mean, to the point where one of the people who had actually gone, and this was the claim that he made, that he was on a warp-capable spacecraft that went from here to the edge of the Andromeda Galaxy in 20 minutes, and that when they got there, they located at least 8 Earth-like planets in some of the star systems along the edge of the galaxy. And 8 of those planets had human life on them. They were Earth-sized planets with sun-like stars, stars similar to our sun, at approximately the same distances. They wound up using some kind of radio telemetry sensors to determine which ones were broadcasting in conventional radio and television signals. They found 2 planets like that, 2 of which were speaking English. And the minute I heard this, I thought, well, this is complete baloney, or this system, this whole program has been going on for a lot longer than anybody would dream. But he described seeing cities and roads and cars and people and you know, conventional clothing speaking English. And there's only one way that that's possible, I mean, other than, you know, parallel universe type of a scenario, and that is that the program's
getting
been going
crazy,
on
guys.
Much, much longer.
Right after about the 6-year mark in my 20 and back experience, I found out some very disturbing details that no one on the ship knew about. and, well, almost no one. I was approached by a petty officer Wheeler, someone who I honestly had a crush on, and she used that to her advantage. She needed me and an engineer to help her get into a room, a restricted room, and look into some pods. She wanted to know what was in those pods. She had a bad feeling. Well, we helped her get in, and I was standing watch. She and the engineer opened up one of the pods, and they were cryogenic chambers, and they were full of people that had basically been looked like they'd been filleted and cleaned and sent to the market. While I saw this a little bit from a distance, some gas was escaping from this pod, and it overcame the petty officer and the engineer, and they collapsed. And before, as I was turning to run through the door I was watching through, I collapsed. After I came to in the sick bay, they had explained that the two others had died in the accident, and that I was being held for debriefing. I was then debriefed, told not to repeat the information to anyone else. If I wasn't a valuable intuitive empath, my fate would have been much different. So they sent me back to my regular duties and told me that from time to time I was going to be pulled over to work on a different deck, a different project. And this project was basically a galactic slave trade. It turned out that for many decades, while we were developing technology to try to fight some of the negative ETs, there were extraterrestrials that were coming into our solar system, were coming to our planet, would swoop down and kidnap people and leave, and then take them and trade them off into some sort of galactic slave trade that's going on. After a while, the benevolent powers that be decided, you know what, this is a commodity. If we start calling our own people and trading them off to these extraterrestrials, we can get trinkets, we can get technology, we can get biologicals, and that's what happened. They would trade human beings for biological samples, much like what Emery Smith would end up receiving in his lab and doing different experiments on. And they would also get technology, and they would trade the humans off. The humans would go off to be used in any number of ways. Humans are very coveted. People aren't only leaving to be food for reptilians.
What do you want?
Percentage. Most of them are being used for their skills. Humans are very well known for our engineering, our
creativity, what do you want?
Our ability to bring things from our mind and create them and engineer them. And strangely enough, we're coveted and used in that fashion. So the Cabal group has been basically utilizing human beings as a resource. So as little groups of people from all of these different programs started to join and work very quietly and secretly to not only find out the full truth of what was going on,
open lines will be 30 minutes, man.
The SSP Alliance is a very small fraction of the overall secret space program or secret space programs, you know, under 1%. So the only technology that they have is what they brought with them when they defected. It is a ragtag group that is doing their best to bring full disclosure to humanity. They don't want a slow, protracted disclosure. They want all of these technologies given to all of humanity at once, not to any one group, any one country, to everyone at once. And that is what the Secret Space Program Alliance has been working for.
The collective story that these insiders have shared with me is much bigger than where the UFO community had been going up until then, and thus it has utterly revolutionized the whole basic discussion of what everyone is now talking about. Whether they agree with it or not, everyone has had to deal with the concept of the secret space program.
According to some estimates, we cannot track $2.3 trillion in transactions.
On September 10th, 2001, the day before 9/11, then Secretary of Defense Donald Rumsfeld testified in front of congressmen about $2.3 trillion missing from the Pentagon. In 2015, an Inspector General report came out detailing that that number grew from $2.3 trillion to $6.5 trillion missing from the Pentagon. This money is going into unacknowledged projects both above our heads and below ground, into deep underground military bases and secret space programs with technology far beyond what many of us can even realize.
Our black budget, for instance, garners $1.023 trillion every 2 years. It's over $500 billion a year. Right now, there are 131 active deep underground military bases in the United States. There's 1,477 of them worldwide. Each one has an average cost of $17 to $19 billion. Each one is built in the site it used to take a year to 2 years to build each one, and now they're capable of building a couple of them a year with sophisticated methods. Area 51 is only one base, one of the 131 bases. Of these 131 bases, I call Area 51 a mega base. It's got more than one base in it. It's Tonopah Test Range, Area 51, S2, S4, Groom Lake, and a host of others. Now, these mega bases are gobbling up our gross national product. Right now, we're spending 28% of the gross national product on building underground bases solely.
China has built 50 different ghost cities that collectively are built to hold an estimated 64 million inhabitants. The apartment buildings, the roads, all of the infrastructure, all the plumbing, all the electrical, everything you need for a city, and there's nobody there. 50 cities, 64 million people. Now remember, China's gross domestic product is $11.2 trillion. They're not even spending a majority of their gross domestic product on these ghost cities, and yet they have the money to do it. It's only cost them a few trillion dollars. So once you start thinking about it that way, you start to see how much money $1,000 billion really is. $1 billion is a lot. If you're a billionaire, you can do anything you want. $1,000 billion is a sum of money that just gets dropped out there with this word trillion, but we're not really thinking about how it literally can build an entire civilization. The articles on China's ghost cities refer to it as China's multi-billion dollar debt, not a debt in the trillions. In fact, in 2016, one estimate that I saw showed that the total estimated debt that China has gone into to build these ghost cities is only $2.5 trillion. Now that's 50 different cities that hold 64 million people, just because they think that as they continue to have a population boom, that they need to have a place where these people can eventually go. But literally nobody is there right now. So imagine what that means when you start tossing around a figure of the too big to fail banks needing a bailout that, according to Senator Ron Paul, was $29 trillion. You're talking about over 10 times the amount of money that China needed to build 50 different ghost cities that can hold millions and millions and millions of people. So then the question is, where did all this money go? The total amount of money in the world in the 2008 year of the collapse, the gross world product, or GWP, was only $60 trillion. So the theft of $29 trillion from the printed out of hot air U.S. dollar is half of the wealth of the entire world. Try to wrap your head around this, because what I'm telling you is, from all the insiders I've been speaking to for the last 20 years, they are building civilizations. It's just not above ground
where we see it on the surface of the planet. There is vast amounts of underground drilling. There are huge caverns 20, 30 miles wide that they've built out into gorgeous, elaborate cities, and they're building entire civilizations on planets and moons in our solar system. This is where the money is going.
Well, I have a copy of the Inspector General Act here in front of me, and it says, among other things, that it's your responsibility to conduct and supervise audits and investigations relating to the programs and operations of your agency.
That's correct.
So I'm asking you if your agency has, in fact, according to Bloomberg, extended $9 trillion in credit, which, by the way, works out to $30,000 for every single man, woman, and child in this country. I'd like to know, if you're not responsible for investigating that, who is?
At this point, we're conducting our lending facility project at a fairly high level and have not gotten to a specific level of detail to really be in a position to respond to your question.
Have you conducted any investigation or auditing of the losses that the Federal Reserve has experienced on its lending since last September?
We're still in the process of conducting that review. Until we actually, you know, go out and gather the information, I'm not in a position to really respond to the specific question.
So are you telling me that nobody at the Federal Reserve is keeping track on a regular basis of the losses that it incurs on what is now a $2 trillion portfolio?
Until we actually look at the program and have the information, we are not in a position to say whether there are losses or to respond in any other way to that
particular. Mr. Chairman, my time is up, but I have to tell you honestly, I am shocked to find out that nobody at the Federal Reserve, including the Inspector General, is keeping track of this.
What's amazing is that right now we're seeing the very first audit of the Pentagon ever. And this audit could very well begin to expose the trillions and trillions, upwards of even 21 trillion, if not more money than that, begin to be exposed. And we might even find out very soon where all this money actually went.
Let's go back now to the LIBOR scandal that happened in the wake of the 2008 economic collapse. LIBOR is an acronym that stands for London Interbank Offered Rate. And what we're finding is that these two big-to-fail banks are only appearing to be in competition with each other. The LIBOR scandal revealed that these guys are calling each other on the phone, colluding about how to rig their own interest rates so that one appears to be winning, one appears to be losing, but they're actually like branch offices of a single larger corporation. All of the apparent competition, oh, these guys' stock is going down, oh, it's a bloodbath. No. They're doing all this together. They're competing only on paper when, in fact, it's collusion. This is financial organized crime on such a massive scale. How can you arrest all the banks? They're too big to fail. This gets into a law that was passed in the United States in 1970 called the RICO Act, which stands for Racketeer, Influenced, and Corrupt Organizations. And that act was built to be able to take down massively organized crime. None of this really makes sense until you get back into the idea of the Federal Reserve System. Now, up until the Federal Reserve was founded in 1913, the United States essentially was in control of its own currency. This same banking cartel that we've been talking about worked behind the scenes to create a series of fake economic crises in the late 1800s and early 1900s, which caused regular Americans to have their savings wiped out. This became such a crisis that people were desperately calling for reform. And then the government comes along and says, look, we're bribed, corrupt politicians. We don't really know what we're doing. They have spokespeople saying these kinds of things in the media. Let's bring in the investors. Let's bring in the British bankers, the people who really know how to make money. They've been doing it for a long time. They're not just going to hold an office for a few years and go disappear. They are the guys who really understand how to run a financial system. So what did we do? We handed over the issuance of American currency to a private corporation of private bankers. When you see Federal Reserve note on the U.S. dollar, that means it's printed by the Federal Reserve. The Federal Reserve, since they came into power just over a century ago, has eroded the purchasing power of the U.S. dollar by 99%. So what was really going on there? Do you think that these investors built up the equity of the United States, made us more profitable. It's exactly the opposite. We have been living in a prolonged economic depression. They just don't call it that because the metrics that we use to measure the economy are coming from a rigged system, just like we saw with LIBOR. Don't bother to look at the Dow Jones. Don't bother to look at the NASDAQ. That has nothing to do with the reality of everyone else and how hard it has become to earn a living. The complete wiping out of the middle class. You have rich and you have poor. And even among the rich, you then have super rich people where a concentrated small cluster of individuals have so much wealth that it could feed entire nations, entire peoples. So this is something that is an economic inequality that must be addressed. And the only way that we're ever really going to learn this is by a collective, massive understanding.
I say the elite powers in control, which is nothing, which is really the same as these central banking dynasties that are basically sitting over the nations. They are a form of global government, except that they are not government at all. They're just dominance. They are dominance. They are the ones that issue the orders to all the nations. As we saw clearly in 1947, after Roswell, we saw these elite powers in control issue these orders to all the nations that anything real that comes up in regards to alien visitors or UFOs must immediately be covered up at all costs, no matter what. And that was the first, that was how that wall, the embargo of truth, that Berlin Wall went up originally in 1947. And that's an example of them in action over the nations. And that's the reason why disclosure and the images that conjures up in our minds is not a real thing, really. Because the nations, whether you're talking about the United States or any place else, they don't have the actual agenda of aliens to reveal. They're not on the inside of that. They really aren't. Nations just follow orders. That's all they do. And that's what they're doing now, and that's what they always do. And when you see them all doing something strange or something that seems out of the ordinary, it's because they're following the orders of the elite powers in control.
We stand at the birth of a new millennium, ready to unlock the mysteries of space, to free the earth from the miseries of disease, and to harness the energies, industries, and technologies of tomorrow. A new national pride will stir our souls, lift our sights, and heal our divisions. It's time to remember that old wisdom our soldiers will never forget, that whether we are black or brown or white, we all bleed the same red blood of patriots.
After the inauguration, the president signed a number of secret memorandums stating that he wanted the release of advanced technology, that and a lot of this technology was involved in the space program, and he was very aware of it. We know that President Trump is aware of advanced technologies because his uncle was the one who went in and cleared out the safe of Tesla after his death. So we are fairly sure that President Trump grew up bouncing on his uncle's knee, hearing stories of free energy. Aside from the secret space program alliance, we have a different alliance. It is made up of all of these countries that have been fighting against this cabal for 50 years or so. It is also made up of various military groups that have broken away from the cabal, such as elements of the United States military intelligence groups have broken away and have been participating with a lot of other breakaway groups in trying to overthrow the cabal who took over the United States back in the 1960s, around 1963. This alliance, Earth Alliance, began to get more and more organized. And they got organized to a point to where some of them approached some generals and told them that they wanted to do an open coup in the United States. These generals decided they would make one last ditch attempt to get rid of the cabal legally. And that's when they approached Trump, allegedly, to run for president and allow them to legally get the country back, basically.
The Alliance is an international group. It is a confederacy. There are lots of different factions, some of which agree, some of which do not agree, about the only thing that they all have in common is they want to see this satanic, pedophile, elitist cabal come down in flames. They do not want these people trying to kill off most of the planet, trying to control all of this immensely high technology. The Alliance also consists of a surprising majority now of personnel in the U.S. military and in the U.S. intelligence community. So we're going to have to deal with the fact sooner or later, and probably sooner, that not everybody in the government is bad. This is part of the psyop that was put out through movies and through media to get us to completely distrust all levels of society, all of the institutions, so that no one will ever be able to oppose these people. You're not going to do this by a bunch of keyboard warriors on the internet. They're not going to actually take the solid action that needs to be taken. What you do need to see is what we now are counting up in August 2018 as 45,000 sealed indictments. Now, this is on the official U.S. government court record. You can go to the pacer.gov website, which lists all of the lawsuits and all of the indictments filed in all of the different districts in America, and just count up the sealed indictments. The official count, the undisputed count, is 45,000. And the normal number for any given year is approximately 1,000. Now, this is a very, very big story that people are really not seeing exactly how awesome this is. Let's talk about what do you have to do to get a sealed indictment. Okay, a sealed indictment is the result of a secret grand jury proceeding. Now, what is a secret grand jury? A secret grand jury requires a panel of 12 to 23 U.S. citizens who are then given information and testimony from a prosecutor. The prosecutor is prosecuting a particular individual who is not invited to the proceedings, has no idea this is going on. And in legal terms, that's called ex parte. So he or she is testified against by the prosecutor, and then the jury has to decide if there is sufficient cause to prosecute this person with a crime, in which case they file a sealed indictment. The indictment stays off the record. You don't get to know the person's name until they unseal it, at which point the person is immediately arrested. And then they get to have the regular trial by jury with a judge. But you have to understand that the prosecutor is either a federal U.S. attorney, a county district attorney, or a state attorney general. These are big, big league players. This is not some attorney that you hire in Podunk, okay? These are major players creating major indictments. And the reason why they do it this way is that they're prosecuting organized crime. Typically, that's what it is. They're prosecuting a larger ring where they can't indict one person at a time. They have to get all their ducks in a row. They have to line it all up so that when they unseal the indictments, everybody gets arrested at once, and there's no ability for them to tip each other off that something happened so that the rats can flee off of the sinking ship. They all get nailed at once.
The phenomenon known as Q, or QAnon, came onto the scene at the very end of October 2017. And what essentially occurred is that a group that called themselves Q began posting on anonymous online image boards called 4chan and 8chan. And what they were posting was a lot of questions, a lot of suggestions, a lot of very interesting and intriguing data sets that essentially laid out a real-time takedown of the deep state by Alliance and white hat groups behind the scenes.
As the QAnon briefings recently stated, these indictments are going to be like Watergate times 1,000. We've never seen anything like this in the history of the world. Some of the most recent QAnon briefings, which our insiders have told us is coming from the Alliance, have said that there are many, many figures in the controlled mainstream media who are in these indictments as well. So Harvey Weinstein is just the beginning. And isn't it interesting that when Harvey Weinstein was finally arrested, in his hand he had the biography of Elia Kazan, who was a guy in early Hollywood history who was brought in during the McCarthy investigations and sang like a songbird and ratted out many other people in Hollywood. And Weinstein has now said he's doing the same thing and that everybody in Hollywood was doing the same stuff that he was doing. So he was upset about why he got singled out. So once these indictments become unsealed, this will be the fulfillment of the mass arrest scenario that I have been leaking on my website since 2009.
The only two indictments that we've had unsealed so far involved the cult group Nexium, the founder of Nexium, Keith Raniere, and one of his understudies, the actress Allison Mack. These are the only two unsealed court records so far. And their unsealed indictments actually labeled child sex trafficking on them. And Nexium has found to be a hotbed of cult activity, of ritual abuse, and of child sex abuse, even. So if these are the only two records that have been unsealed so far, and they are taking down names of this caliber with charges of this caliber, we can only imagine what the rest of these unsealed indictments are going to show us.
This is nothing new. It didn't start with the QAnon briefings, has nothing to do with who's president of the United States right now. This is a decades-long effort in the making, and they have tried and tried and tried in various ways to get this to work. They've had consistent failures, and now they're being much more systematic and much more methodical. It's all going to be done legally. All of the indictments are totally bona fide, and it's just that once this finally happens, it will be something we have never seen before in all of American history, a true second American revolution.
One of the things I learned as an FBI agent is it's not that I learned to believe in conspiracies more. What I learned to know is when I am caught up in a river of deception and everybody else around me is being taken on the same current and we're all being taken in one direction, and suddenly one guy has to stick his head up and say, this isn't right, this is all wrong, we're all just being fed garbage and we're not being told the truth. Well, how is it that technology in today's age, our technology has moved forward by leaps and bounds in so many areas, yet we're still driving, the entire world is still driving automobiles that function essentially on the same technology that they have for 100 years. 100 years, and we're still using fossil fuels to fill up our gas tanks. How is that possible? That has not moved forward hardly one iota. I mean, they blend the stuff sometimes, but I mean, essentially, that technology has been stuck for 100 years. Well, that's because that's one of the economic factors from the globalists that is so dead set against distributing real energy, which is free energy, which we know was discovered during Tesla's time.
So Nikola Tesla is known, of course, for delving into free energy or zero-point energy sciences, but funny enough, near the end of Nikola Tesla's life, he was actually delving into anti-gravity research. And unfortunately, Tesla didn't have enough time nor money towards the end of his life to be able to continue his research into anti-gravity, but he passed along his knowledge to a man named Otis Carr. And funny story about that, Nikola Tesla was staying in a hotel in New York near the end of his career, and during his stay at this hotel, he befriended one of the workers that was there, and that was Otis Carr. And they courted a relationship, and Nikola Tesla actually felt comfortable enough to begin sharing some of his research with Otis Carr. Now, Otis Carr then went, after Nikola Tesla's passing, to develop this research out a little bit more so, and Otis Carr actually developed what was called the OCT-X1, I believe, and it was actually a flying saucer craft that was piloted with the consciousness of the individual, and he did supposedly actual experiments that were successful in navigating both space and time with this craft. So we could say Otis Carr actually was the first person to develop a civilian-based space program. But he was essentially run out of business and was not able to continue the work he was doing because the military-industrial complex suppressed his work.
But the same forces that destroyed that, I mean, at that time, supposedly it was Thomas Edison, who was a part of the global system. I mean, he was the original fossil fuels and normal electricity system, and he was just a front man to destroy Tesla and destroy his because the efforts to destroy his patents came from national government, not just Edison and his private conglomerate that had billions of dollars even at that time. And the reason for that is why? Because this effort to repress free energy was coming from the elite powers in control, the ones that sit on top of everybody and tell everybody, we got to stop this. And what we're seeing today, of course, is that free energy is like a dam that they're sprouting leaks, and it's getting ready to burst forward because it is coming, and it's coming really soon. Because it's been out there for so long. And I think we're getting to the point where it is going to come forward. And it's going to come forward maybe from several sources at the same time, because the pressure has built up so much from so many different sources. So I think we are going to get it very soon.
I was asked to give a paper at Vandenberg Air Force Base to the American Institute of Aeronautics and Astronautics. And their normal request would have been, tell us how you're trying to get new business using advanced technology. In other words, that was my job, to run 250 guys with different disciplines to try to get new business. But instead, I surprised them by saying, I want to give a talk called The Giant Discoveries of Future Science. And there was a moment of silence, and okay. So I developed this talk, and in this talk, what I established was, I distinguished the difference between engineering and science. Engineers being people who want to build something to make it work, they don't really care how to get there, and the scientists who want to know the quote truth. Uh-huh. And I made that distinction, and then I gave examples of 10 scientific facts that are essentially established. You know, that the Earth evolved by gradual processes, and that there are Maxwell's equations are the right answer, that Einstein's E equals MC squared, that was all good. And then I took these 10 greatest achievements by the 10 scientists and asked, what can we tell about these 10? And the interesting thing was that you could tell three things. Number one, not a single one of them was known in the field. Number two, every single one of them had been criticized by their peers as being stupid or charlatans. And number three, the average age was 23 when they made their discovery. Uh-huh. So I took that thought and wrote down a list of what I thought were the 12 greatest discoveries of the future, uh-huh, that we had to attack. And the first one was how the UFOs work. The second was time travel was at towards the end, but the processes of the brain and the mind, psychic discoveries, psychokinesis, that sort of thing, and a bunch of those things were on the list. And the amazing thing is that today, in 2017, I am satisfied that my list that I said would maybe, and I give a probability of discovering these things, you know, 20 years from now, mm-hmm, my list was essentially already discovered, every single one, including time travel, at the time that I gave this paper.
My engine's complete. I rebuilt it. I have the entire package setting and outsourced on the servers around the planet. Upon my death, the servers dump everything onto the web. And I mean everything. Blueprints, schematics, diagrams, list of materials, list of tools, list of suppliers that will help you get tools, dimensions, three-dimensional working models. You'll be able to any normal lab would be able to reconstruct this thing, get the same results I did. And I want that done because that will be validation of technology. But once it's built, it's not going to sit there. They're going to use it. And I expect in a year's time, once that kind of technology is done, they build it, they start using it, oil is reduced to a lubricant planet-wide, and that's it. That's the first step. Imagine what happens next. I don't want to be around. That's the reason it would be a media circus, and I just not into that. So I'll just leave it behind, and y'all can play with it and do with what you want.
So how do we hear all of this information and not feel disempowered? How does it not feel hopeless? Well, I look back when I start to feel hopeless to the reports of legitimate ET contacts that have occurred in the 40s, 50s, and 60s. In all of those reports, the ETs asked two things: grow spiritually or expand your consciousness, and demand the release of suppressed technologies from your governments. Those are the two things that we can focus on. If we begin to organize and demand the release of suppressed technologies, they will have no choice. If we focus inwardly on whatever our religion is, becoming the best human being that we can, and expanding our consciousness beyond our comfortable belief systems, when we do those two things, we are going to gain the freedom that we desire.
I started realizing that the cabal or the Illuminati or whatever you want to call them, they keep us fighting with each other intentionally because they know that the potential in our unified consciousness, should we ever come together and stop fighting with each other, is extremely powerful. And they have been using that energy against us, like farming and managing our consciousness in such a way that we spin out a version of reality from the thoughts they program into us that makes the Matrix, just like in the Matrix films. And so we have made the Matrix that's our prison. We made it from our consciousness and our thought that's been managed, farmed, programmed, and controlled. And if that's true, then we have the power within ourselves to come together and stop fighting with each other and remake the world. And emotion is key. We're not taught anything about how to deal with our emotions in this world. It's like a big black hole, and we just spurt emotional energy all over the place like an out-of-control garden hose. You know, would we waste money like that in most cases? Would we waste gasoline in our car that way? No. Well, we need to look at our emotional energy the same way, because that's the big key. And we have powerful emotions as human beings, and that means a lot of emotional power. But the only way we can wield it is to come together and find our commonalities and build on those and stop looking at our ideologies that might divide us and our beliefs that might divide us. We've got to come together. We've got to focus on the fact we're all human beings. We all have hearts and souls and conscience, and we need to look at what brings us together, and then we need to take the emotional energy of that love and connection and make that really, really powerful, and then release it intentionally in waves of consciousness, energy, and power that can remake this world and the Matrix it's based on in ways that we want for ourselves, for our children, for our grandchildren, for all the animals and the environment. We can remake it just through the power of consciousness. We can get full disclosure just through the power of consciousness. But we can only wield this energy together, and we can only wield it with love for each other and the planet.
We're at the early stages of this movement, and every movement, you know, whether we're talking about the civil rights movement, the abolition movement, you know, the women's rights movement, it's always, once it reaches a kind of like a critical mass, then the political changes happen.
So this is a very, very compelling story. I do believe that it's time for all of us to take a stand. We cannot simply step back and allow all these things to happen. Even if we don't fully believe everything that the people in this movie and other insiders like them have been saying, it's worthy of our consideration. Can we really afford to be so ignorant as to turn our backs on this information? We don't have the time to sit around and argue about whether this information is true. The planet is dying. We have economic collapse. We have mass starvation. We have the largest mass extinction since the collapse of the dinosaurs. Our ecosphere is collapsing. We see the lack of water. We see ever-increasing global temperatures. And no one really is doing anything about it. The entrenched power structure stays the way it is. We're still burning fossil fuels. We're still not getting access to these amazing technologies. If we do get full disclosure, now the dam breaks. Now we're in a totally new reality, which very well could be the golden age that was promised to us in so many different ancient teachings and traditions. I do believe that in our lifetimes, we will see the full disclosure of the so-called forbidden technology. We will become a truly galactic civilization. And we will do this with the cooperation of people in the military, people in the intelligence community, people who were working for the cabal and have decided to break away from all that, become insiders, and be the change that we want to see in the world. This film is an embodiment of that global movement. This film is the red pill that wakes you up to what's really going on in the world. They do not have the staff to fight us. The cabal is losing. We are on the winning side of history. We are moving forward step by step. And at some point, this is all going to break open. So when we raise consciousness, when we come together as a group, when we create this initiative, when we define what we want by having that be our state of mind, we are literally transforming this planet into the golden oasis that it was always supposed to be, and the breathtaking future that we have been hearing about from so many ancient traditions, whether you want to call it ascension, the golden age, whatever it is, I do believe it's possible, and it is up to us to co-create this amazing reality.
Power in defense of freedom is greater than power in behalf of tyranny and oppression, because power, real power, comes from our convictions, which produce uncompromising action. Every daring attempt to make a great change in existing conditions, every lofty vision of new possibilities for the human race, has been labeled utopian. Like it or not, everything is changing. The result will be the most wonderful experience in the history of humanity, or the most horrible enslavement that you can imagine. We must draw our strength from the very despair in which we have been forced to live. We were born with potential. We were born with goodness and trust. We were born with ideals and dreams. We were born with greatness. We are the universe in ecstatic motion, and it does not require many words to speak the truth. The ultimate end of all revolutionary social change is to establish the sanctity of human life, the right of every human on the planet to liberty and well-being. Do not allow yourself to get lost in the fear of change. Remember, the wound is the place where the light enters you. We are here to laugh at the odds and live our lives so well that death will tremble to take us.
Right. Let's take this out. Let's take this out. Catch you on the next episode. No doubt.